Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you
Good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. What a magnificent evening we are going to have tonight. And I am so happy to have my guest here. I've known my guest for a while, and now I get a chance to get to know him, really. We've been talking a little bit before we came on the air, and it's just been delightful. This is Lenny Godfrey calling, you know, talking to you now, and we're nearing the two-year anniversary of this program. I thank you all so much. Those of you who have just set your clocks to it, Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and those who are not in Eastern Standard Time, and you set your clocks to 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock or whatever it is that you set it to, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Yeah, I want to be able to tell you all, if you're new, that you're listening to blogtalkradio.com/ S is in Sam, F is in Fred, T is in Tom, H is in Harry, and the number 2. And if you want to call in and you hear anything that you'd like to ask a question about or to say something to our guest about, please do call in and let us know that you are interested and have a question at 516-453-6063. But don't forget to press the number 1. So with all of that housekeeping done, and you know I do that every week, but I always want to welcome new listeners every single time. I don't want to take for granted that you know everything and how to do everything. So now, let me tell you about my guest. And I'm not, believe me, I could spend the next 5-10 minutes on the kinds of credits that this gentleman has. But I'm going to try to just talk about some of the lighter things so that we can get into the heavier things about him. First of all, he is a consultant. He is, the consummate artist, an archivist, a writer, a director. I mean, he really covers the spectrum of the arts. He is a man who has come to New York City and made his place in our industry. You've seen his work on Facebook. You've seen his work all on the internet. You know that when you see something that says Dale Ricardo Shields, that it is going to be accurate, it is going to be professional, and I'm so proud to welcome my guest this evening, which is Dale Ricardo Shields. Say hello, Dale.
Hello. Thank you so much, Lenny, for this opportunity, and it's so wonderful to hear your voice after all these many years.
Well, thank you so very much. Really, I mean, you know, I wanted to go down and start telling people that you are, I want to continue this introduction while Dale is here and talking. I don't usually do this, but you really need to know some of the things that Dale has accomplished lately. He is the 2017 winner of the Kennedy Center Stephen Sondheim Inspirational Teacher Award. Educator, also, let's add that, 2017 and 2015 Tony Award nominee for the Excellence in the Theater Education Award and the 2017 Adolco Special Achievement Award, 2020, 2021, 2022 Encore Award. and the act is fun and winner of the 2022 Urban Legend Award. Now, that's in Ohio University. Now, that's just the beginning. That's just the opening. So I want to go back to before all of the awards, all the accolades, all the hard, and I'm telling you, hours of work that I know that you put in. Let's go all the way back. Aren't you from Cleveland, Ohio?
I am from Cleveland, Ohio. That is true.
And don't we have a couple of mutual friends that are from Cleveland, Ohio? Or Ohio?
We do, quite frankly. Jeffrey Thompson, Chuck Cooper, and Gwen Gilliam. Gwen and I went to high school together. And Jeffrey and Chuck and I attended Ohio University together. So they're all three longtime friends, and at this point, as they say, they're family for me. That's family.
Yes. Tell me, I'm asking out of school now about Gwen and Jeffrey and Chuck. When you knew Gwen in high school, did you think that she was going to be in show business? And did she show any signs of the consummate professional that she is?
Well, funny enough, Gwen was an actress when I met her in high school.
Oh.
She was on stage. And I think she got, well, I know for sure, she went to Northwestern University, and she got the next thing I know, she was very much into lighting design and then stage management. But when I met her, I wanted to be the lighting designer. That's what I thought I was going to do. Gwen was so classy and intelligent and reserved that I knew success was coming somewhere, somehow, in some place.
Mm-hmm.
But Gwen's, she's brilliant. And even once I got to New York, I think I was up in the South Bronx. I was working with a youth group up in the South Bronx, and I got them to bring Gwen in because we needed help with lights. And she kind of did it as a favor for me. But
mm-hmm.
I remember I was trying to figure out a scene, and Gwen was fumbling with the lights on the side, and then she tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Dale, I know what you're trying to do. If you do this and this and this, that'll work." And then she went back to her lights. And what she said to me, it worked. That's my Gwen. brilliant lady.
Yes, very, very smart. wonderful. And so you knew Jeffrey and Chuck. How did you know them in school? Were you all in the theater department together?
Jeffrey and I were freshmen together. So we went through those 4 years together. The interesting thing about Jeffrey, which kind of helped me get to where I'm at this point, was suddenly I realized that Jeffrey could share a lot of information about Shakespeare. And at that point in time, my head wasn't really into that much. And that started me to think about research. And I said, my goodness, how does he know all this stuff? We're the same age, we're in the same class, but he would just give me little tidbits here and there. And that kind of started me on the journey of, well, Dale, you know, study a little bit harder, do a little more research so that maybe the next conversation I have with Jeffrey on that level, I can add something to the conversation. Because at that point, I was just kind of, you know, looking at him going, oh, okay, all right, never thought of that. I think Chuck was maybe a year after us, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
And because typically theater departments don't have that many students of color, and he was from Cleveland, we just all became buddies. Kept in touch with each other. And then I think Jeffrey and I moved to New York at the same time, and Chuck, you know, of course came after, but through all these years, we've all kept in touch.
Absolutely fabulous. So now,
and it's just been wonderful to see what Chuck, what has happened to Chuck's career. I'm so proud of him.
Oh yes, he's such a talented family. I mean, his wife is talented. His daughter's very talented. I mean, my goodness, it's a wonderful.
I was at the hospital for every single one of those births.
Oh my God!
So he would call us and because his children's mother, she also went to Ohio University, and she was a good friend of mine. So it was those kind of phone calls of, you know, come to the hospital.
So now I've gotten you all the way back to high school. But what before high school gave you the incentive about show business at all? What started that for you?
My grandfather had a group, a gospel singing group in the 40s called the Shields Brothers. And they own the cleaners. And then my father, growing up in that atmosphere, he started the Shields Brothers Jr., which meant there was always music in the house. Music everywhere. In every room. And those rehearsals were in our house. My mother sang with a gospel group called the Arthur Turner Gospel Choir, and these are all big things that were in Cleveland, Ohio, just to give it a setting. But with that, there was a lot of music. There were a lot of entertainers that if they came through Cleveland, they ended up in our living room. So I can remember walking into the living room and James Cleveland was sitting, you know, in a chair. there was always some kind of artistic thing going on. And my parents really supported that kind of artistic atmosphere to be in the house. So we got a chance to listen to all kinds of different music. And I had older cousins that were into jazz. So I got introduced to Jimmy Smith and, you know, Wes Montgomery and all those kind of people at a very young age. So it was quite obvious that I think I was going to be one of those a child that was interested in the arts. And then I started getting interested into architecture and the design of homes. And my poor mother would come into our living room and see I had rearranged the furniture. And what I didn't realize at the time was I was setting up scenes. So that was the first, my first idea of he wants to be a director, you know, really that's what I was doing. So I just come from an artistic background where that kind of expression was supported and exhibited.
When you were in school, you said you wanted to be a light designer. Did you study that, or was that just an appeal to you?
The school that I went to, which was John F. Kennedy, it was named for him, of course, after his assassination, had to be a multi-million-dollar brand-new stage and a brand-new lighting system. And I saw it and asked the drama teacher, could I learn about how it worked? So it was such a sophisticated system, especially for high school at that time. And the high school that I went to, I think, was the only one in Cleveland that had 5 sessions of acting, of theater, within its, you know, curriculum. So quickly, I got into that, and then the next thing I know, anytime they rented out the school, they had to hire me to run the lights, and that was kind of the pull between me being on stage and running lights.
Running lights, yes.
On that level. And then I got into college thinking that that's what I was going to do, but I kept being easily pulled in all these other directions. So I started finding other things that I thought were interesting. you know, and I realized when I got on the real stage just how high up those lights were and that I wasn't doing well on ladders.
I hear you.
But anyway, I started assisting directing, and I started stage managing, and I started running sound. And the more things that were introduced to me, the more exciting my life got. And in fact, I did an interview with two of my former undergraduate professors from Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. And they were laughing because they said, well, he would try anything. You know, so somebody said, hey, we need somebody to run sound. I said, okay, I'll do it, you know, because I just found everything interesting.
Yes. Well, you know, and that's the important thing. You know, you want to be able to open. I remember studying and being told that I had to take all the classes, playwriting, lighting, scenic design, everything. And it opened up my mind to what it took in order to get a production up, other than the eye-centric, oh, I'm an actor and it's all about me. I realized, like in tech rehearsal, when, you know, they'd say, oh, well, you know, it's just going to take a few more minutes. I should take as long as you want, as long as when you finish, I look fabulous. So don't even worry about it. And I
well, here's the thing with me with that. I started to understand that I needed to be able to speak and understand other artists' language.
Mm-hmm.
So it became very, very helpful to me when I became a director, especially, that I could understand what the lighting designer was telling me.
Exactly.
And I also learned how to hire a lighting designer, how to hire a costume designer, because I understood their language, because I had done it.
Well, you know, the thing is that you, when you are in that position, and, you know, I started directing when I was 19, one of the things that I was told by my professor and by the chairman of the department was take everything. So then when you are hiring people or asking them to do something in your production and they come to you with their efforts, you will know whether or not they have the right stuff.
Right.
And it has proven so true. And many times I've had to, you know, if someone has promised that they're going to do something and then something happens and they couldn't do it. And I've had to stand in and do it myself because, you know, that is the experience. That's the experience that you have. You have the ability to be able to do something like that. And that's what's incredible.
And you could do it yourself. And then I've been in situations where people have told me, no, I can't do that. And I said, well, let me show you how.
Yeah.
So, indeed, it can be done. Now, you can say you don't want to do it. But certainly it can be done, and I can say that to you.
Exactly. Do you want to do it or, you know, those kinds of things. So, you know, but it's always interesting to find out how it was introduced to someone who does many different things. A hyphenated person, as they call people now. You know, you're a hyphenated person. I go, oh, okay. You know, whatever you want to call me, yes.
Let's also add that I think there were life skills in that have helped me as a human being, trying to understand or know other people's language, cultures. That tends to put you at ease when you can understand, well, this is probably where that's coming from.
Coming from, exactly.
Before I take a sense to it, I understand, well, you're from here or you're from there or you're used to this. And it's not necessarily you being mean to me. It's just another way of handling life because that's your culture.
Exactly.
Those are your customs.
It opens you up, though. It definitely opens you up and makes you a more well-rounded human being if you allow it to. You have to allow it. You know, I mean, there are people who, you know, because it's all about them all the time, that they're not well-rounded. I mean, if you have a conversation with them and you veer away from them and their accomplishments, there's nothing to talk about for them, you know.
Right.
But I'm so excited when I really come across someone who is well-read, well-rounded. You can sit down and talk to them about the theater and how the theater is influenced in different parts of our society, not just on the stage, not just in a cinema, you know, setting, what all those images mean and how what the commitment is and all of those things. That's an exciting conversation to have. And I've really been very, very blessed in order to have that. Now, with you, what I discovered when I first met you, I perceived you as performer. And then having gone away to L.A. and come back to New York and, you know, years past, I discovered you as a writer. And I thought, this is a whole nother facet of Dale that I don't know about. How did you come to get involved first with the baby boomers? I know that that it was not started by you, but we are going to give kudos to Joe and let her know that we know that she started it, but how did you get involved in all that?
I'm sorry, I missed the part.
The baby boomers that, you know, creating the network of those of us.
Oh, I understand.
Who are,
oh, you're talking about, well, first of all, I had my own. So I had Black Theater, African-American Voices, I think even before Annie Jo started
Annie
her
Jo.
Group.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. she and I were like really good friends, and there were sometimes when I would just find a piece that I thought might be useful, so I would give it to her and say, if this is of use to you and your group. So she quickly made me an administrator on her group too, and I got a chance to kind of, you know, why just plant it on my page when it might be interesting to somebody in her group?
Right.
And we started
right.
calling the groups brother and sister groups. And mm-hmm. we all knew the same people, Annie Jo and I. We both knew the same people. So that's how that started. But I started with my own journey because of my academic background. So when I was at Ohio University to get, again, after getting my bachelor's degree, to get my master's degree, I started learning the joys of research and dramaturgy and history. And I started to understand, in looking at my art, to place it in its historical context. So I got a really better understanding of not only what play. If I would take even A Raisin in the Sun, well, then I went, well, what was going on in Chicago at that time? What
right.
kind of music played at that time?
Mm-hmm.
And I turned into this nerd. And I was loving it. And all of you guys, which was another part of putting my groups together, I missed you all because I had gone to college in some small town in Ohio, and then I started getting these jobs in these very, very small places or smaller liberal arts schools where sometimes I was the only person of color around, and I wanted to keep up with you all. So I started writing about you all and digging into you into your lives and in your career. But I wouldn't you kind of asked me a question or stated something about being a writer, and actually I'm not. I'm more of an archivist and a historian than a writer, or what I think is a writer. The history started getting to me to the point, Lenny, that all of you became this big, gigantic puzzle. And as I found one piece about, you know, your life, you know, what happened to you when you went to L.A., about your television series, and then who else was there. So I was getting mm-hmm. all these different degrees of connections and separations that I just mm-hmm. found fascinating. And 14 years later, here I am with probably over 30,000 JPEGs of photos. And because I knew you guys personally, sometimes some of you would send me stuff or send me pictures that were never published. Or if I would post something and the information wasn't quite correct, people were being nice enough to private message me and just say, hey, Dale, that's the wrong date, or that's the wrong person, or that's not who is in this photo. So now with that information I have, it's so humongous, I can't even post it all, Lenny. Mm-hmm. It's just
well, now, you said you're not a writer, but have you ever thought about putting a lot of that in a book? I mean, I know the time that you...
You're not the first person who's asked me that. You know what I really wish I could have done with it, and I tried to get... I've tried to get people to help me out with funding. I've tried to in some kind of ways, sell it or give it to somebody and see if we could get grants. Because as I got older, I started thinking, oh, my goodness, what's going to happen to all of this, you know, when mm-hmm. I'm gone? But my really biggest point to all the work that I was doing was it had to stay free. And I wanted it to be easily accessible because I know a lot of students of color might not be able to go out and buy the book. And I had these dreams of just making this whole big encyclopedia of the Black entertainment experience kind of come to life so the reader could explore through it. They could kind of walk through it. And if Lenny Godfrey's name come up, would come up, then on the side you could also see UB Blake. You know what I mean? I mean,
the connection.
And you could see,
yes, the connection.
Yeah,
exactly.
Maurice Hines and Gregory Hines and
right.
You know, just all of these different things and how you guys all would fit together in history. I'm just fascinated by it.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it is, you know. I'm going to say this is, in a sense, now this sounds a little egotistical, but when I sit down and I think about the connections over the years and the network that we created back then, and as we all grew, where we all kind of, you know, spread out and did so many things, there's so many of us who I say right away, I'm books, in history books, and connected. I'm so proud to have been a part of that era. And it was a short era. It wasn't a long era.
But
wasn't it? I mean, you know.
I met you because Jeffrey was my best friend from college.
And he was
doing places, and he would buddy me along. You know, hey, Dale, you want to go with me to, you know, over here or over there? And then out of that, especially out of that cast of UB, so many of your fellow cast members just, they took me in as I was their friend and their buddy, too.
Well,
you know,
and one of the things, for me, I didn't know a lot of people. So all of the people who were friends of Jeffrey's and Gregory's and Maurice, all of them became very friendly to me. I just, you know, for me, I thought, well, I know them too, because I did not know a lot of people in that world. I had not been in it that long. And it was just a wonderful period of time, and it wasn't a long period of time. I talked to Vivian Reed a lot, who I think is just incredible. And
bubbling brown sugar.
Bubbling, yes. You know, and you talk about her, and there was Ethel, who was in that, Ethel Baby, who was in that and was in who I think is an incredibly talented woman. I mean, she's just the vocalist beyond belief, you know. I think about, I know these people. You know, no, I don't, you know of them, but I know these people. And then when I say it in a, you know, you talk to people who weren't in that era, they go, oh, yeah, you all were doing this. And I said, oh, that's right. We become a you all.
Well, the reason why we became a you all is because it was a community.
Yes.
And I've not run into that very, well, probably I've not run into that since. But
no,
I can remember times when something would happen to somebody and the number of people that would show up at the hospital or it doesn't have to necessarily be something negative, or, you know, you get a call, so-and-so, you know, has lost their, you know, one of their parents, and we would kind of all stick together. And then there were so many exciting things happening for artists of color in that Broadway and off-Broadway and off-Broadway world, that we got a chance to all know each other. Probably the reason why I didn't get to know you was I was downtown working for Joseph Papp at the Public Theater. I was on teaching staff.
I see.
Where I spent most of my time was down there. So we were just in different parts, but I connected up with you in Midtown.
Yeah, but the circles overlapped because, you know, you'd see somebody at an affair and everything, and you go, oh my goodness, I'm so glad to see you. I haven't seen you in a while. It's a wonderful time, and it's still a wonderful time to see those people when I get a chance to see them.
It was also a time, Lenny, where some guys who were kind of in my same category. I could be walking down the street and they say, hey, Dale, I just came from an audition.
Mm-hmm.
You should be right. Mm-hmm. You know, you're right for that. Call your agent or see if you can go over there and get in. So it was just that kind of community where nobody kind of kept things to themselves, like, oh, I have this, and I'm not going to share it with anybody.
That was not the way of that community. People would call you up and say, look, I think that this is right for you. I was there. It's not my cup of tea, but, you know, I really think that you should go and try. I remember entering into the business with that kind of conversation happening more than one time for me, and I'm so grateful to the wonderful people who did that. It doesn't happen anymore.
Well, it's not quite that atmosphere anymore, not from what I can see. I can remember, you know, speaking of Jeffrey had been given a chance to write a play, a piece, for I think Georgetown Playhouse in New Jersey. And Jeffrey knew me so well that he wrote this role for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he didn't tell the director that he had written it for me, but he understood my language and the way I spoke and my pattern so much that when I walked in to read it, you know, the woman said, oh, he's great. Well, Jeffrey had written it for me. But it was just the idea of taking care of each other and reaching out to give a hand. And quite frankly, with everything that's going on right now, I miss that. I really, really, really miss that.
Oh, yes. Yes, you do. You know, there's an isolation feeling that happens. You know, you just feel you never felt that you were alone then. You know, there was, you'd walk down the street and you see somebody, everybody's going to Frank Hatch's, or they're going over here to voice class, they're going to this, you know, they're going over here and they're going to Capizio's, you'd walk down the street and it would take you an hour to get to where you were going because you'd meet somebody every half a block, you know. It was our own renaissance. I'm sure the Harlem Renaissance was similar to that, and we had our own renaissance, I think. It was just a lovely, lovely time. Lovely time.
Certainly the Harlem Renaissance was something where there was art everywhere. You know, theater on this corner, music on that corner, poets on that corner. So this was kind of a renaissance of people. And we could party together, and we could work together, and, you know, oh, that's so-and-so's friend, or I know you from here. And New York in the 70s and the 80s was mm-hmm. just a fantastic place to live for me.
Yes, it was. And, you know, I mean, boy, I'm born and raised there, so I always loved New York City. I mean, I loved it before I got into business because it was just fascinating. You know, I'm the only one in my family from New York. My family is from the South, and I am part Southern and part Northern. You know, I have that advantage, and I am so happy to have it because, you know, I adore the Southerness in people, and I absolutely admire the Northern aggressiveness sometimes. So, you know, and in New York, in that time, there were people who came into New York who, because they came, like you came, and their families weren't there. My family was in New York. So many times my mother would come to the theater and then she would invite the cast or some of the cast to come and she would just cook up food and have a good time. And all of that made for that family feeling, you know. It was a joyous time. It has never been replicated. I don't think it ever will be. I've met people who are great, who are brilliant, who I would work with in a second. But the surrounding circumstances were never, no, they're individuals, but never a group where the group, you know, it's a group
of
people.
Times have certainly changed. And certainly through all of this research and history, with not just the arts, I think I got a chance to teach Black theater history, and then I got a chance to teach Black studies. And again, even though it had those titles on them, it really all just kind of fit under a big umbrella of history because so many different people and events were connected. But what I realized, Lenny, to your point, was nobody has to do anything for me, not even call and say hello, not even wish me a happy birthday. So I decided with this part of my life that, hey, if you're a Facebook friend of mine, even if I don't know you that well, I'm going to wish you a happy birthday. If you write something positive, I'm going to give you a positive response. When I was writing, as I wrote a profile on you and all the other people who were very nice to me when all that was beginning, and I wrote, I try to, even with posts now, I try to make sure that I stay on the positive and I stay on the good book and that I'm celebrating it. And I think these times have just gotten things a little bit twisted, and that's why the world is starting to look just a little meaner to me at this point, because I'm not seeing that kind of graciousness in
manner. You know. I don't believe in, what did someone say to me, you know, I said, well, did you hear from the person? Well, did you get a yes or no? Well, no, they didn't call back, so that means no. I said, no, they didn't call back, and so that means they're rude. That doesn't mean no.
I have given younger people or students, former students, I've given their children gifts. I notice that some of them will write back, some of them won't, you know, which is something because you were speaking of the South, like my mother being Southern, if somebody does something for you nice, you respond to it because nobody has to do anything. So that taught me to be grateful. And That all wraps up into, if anybody would look at the work that I'm doing online, that is the basis and the foundation of it all. That I just wanted to celebrate my friends. I found out a lot about you guys that I didn't know. You know, I had a great time looking at and finding pictures of your television series, which I got a whole section of. I have a Lenny Godfrey file. So even the profile that I wrote on you, I keep upgrading it as I find that you're doing stuff. And that's kind of bringing me joy. That also helped me through the COVID period. because instead of sitting here and doing nothing, I did even triple the amount of research and all those different things. I got into art. I got into books, and I kept putting all these different kind of groups up. I made a group for young people who might be thinking that they want to go and study theater, or as many people do, just go to New York or L.A. and just helpful hints, finding lists of scholarships that might help somebody get into school. And that's been my joy. It really has.
It's fabulous. Before we get, because we're coming toward the end of this, we have about 15 more minutes to go, maybe 16, and the board is quite healthy tonight. I just want to tell anyone who's on the board, if you have a question for Dale, if you have a comment for Dale, push the number one, and I will put you on the air, and you can ask him a question or say your comment. All right, I just want to get that in now because, you know,
If you want to go straight into that, we can.
Let me just say, there's a question already. There's two questions. You've got two questions already. So I want to ask you what's coming up next, but I want the audience members to get a chance to talk to you because I got a chance. I'll get a chance a little bit more on our video when we do the Zoom. So here we go. Hello and welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. Give me your first name and where you're calling from.
Hi, my name's Maha. I'm calling from Miami, Florida.
Oh, Miami, my family's from Miami. How are you and how's the weather there?
It's beautiful out today. It was absolutely gorgeous. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Do you have a question for Dale?
Yeah. I just wanted to, you know, I was enjoying the conversation earlier where you all were talking about research and being, you know, the benefits of being a performer, but also understanding how all of the departments work. And I wanted to know if you all could talk a little bit more about how beneficial understanding not only being an actor or being a director, but understanding what different department heads do and how that adds to the storytelling ability rather than it just seems like it's extraneous learning. I just love the idea of knowing how everything works around me and how everybody's trying to think and what their point of view is, and how that adds a little bit to a production, or how that takes away, and not takes away in a bad way, but takes away in terms of we don't need this because I can do this with this design. How has that knowledge served you continuously throughout your career? And this is a question, honestly, for both of you, but I'm just fascinated by how both of you are nerding out on that, and I just wanted to see if you could talk a little bit more about that. Thank you.
Oh, wonderful. Well, Dale, why don't you start, Dale?
Well, first of all, the theater, the arts is collaborative, which means I have to talk to other people. I have to understand what part you're adding to this. When I was teaching acting, I would do an improv technique called a machine, and I use that game just explained that every single piece and part had a part to play. And even that tiny screw, if it wasn't there, maybe the whole machine wouldn't work. So I have to understand what other people are going through so I can make informed creative decisions of how to get this production up. So I even have to understand from the producer's point of view, well, no, Dale, we can't do that. You know, well, no, Dale, that won't fit on our stage, or we can't afford it. You know, or that if we do that, that's going to take away from this. You know, or a customer explaining to me, well, that's wonderful, but that doesn't come in that color. Or if you really, really have to have that, you know, this is what it does to a budget. So I have to understand what a budget means. I had to understand from a musical director what they had to go through with their band or their orchestra. The wonderful thing about what we do is that it's a big community of people who all have different parts and different jobs to do. And if I have no understanding, no concept of what it takes for you to do what you're doing, and I'm sitting at the helm of this, we're probably going to end up with not a good production because we're not talking, we're not communicating. Or as I would say to them, you know, we all can be different kind of apples, but we all have to be apples in order for this to work.
That's an interesting. Yes, I agree with that. I also found that the experience of taking every class when I was studying opened up another world for me that increased the respect that I had for the artisans that I would then later, and when I started to direct a little bit later in my college career, I had great respect for the artisans and the work that they did, as I did when Dale started writing about me, and he writes so explicitly, and he's conscientious, he is accurate, and I know the time that it takes to research that. You have a certain kind of respect for those people. It's not just for me what happens with the production. It's the journey with the people that you're working with. It's knowing that you have people who have the same kind of vision that you have, knowing that they can execute your ideas as a director, as a producer, trusting that, delegating that power, knowing how to delegate the power as a director, and not trying to want to do everything. And also understanding their jargon, what is important to every single facet, that costume designer, when you say that color, well, the color, I'm concerned that the color on this particular person and that has this particular complexion is going to ashen them. So, you know, that's been my experience. Can we go a little lighter? Can we do a little darker?
Also, Lenny, maybe the lighting designer is trying to explain what they need to do in order for that color to work.
Exactly. And I also understand that journey because you've done the journey. Because, you know, now, unlike Dale, I never wanted to be a lighting designer. I did lights. I was a light monkey. I was up there on the railing with a C-wrench in my back pocket in college. That was something that was kind of the training that I did. And did I ever want to do it for a living? No, I wanted to stage manage for a living. And I had such great respect for stage managers because I've done it. And I know the work that is entailed. So it's a great question. Great. I mean, thank you very much, Miami.
And also, Lydia and Maha, I found a lot of people who had no understanding or respect for the crew.
No,
so
exactly.
I've been involved with a lot of young people who would just throw their costumes on the floor, which would make me really.
Or not speak to people when they came in. These are the people who've created an atmosphere for you to come in to go to work. They're there before you
get there. I spoke to everybody that had anything hanging over my head. I wanted to be nice to you.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. That was a magnificent question. And thank you both so much.
Thank you. This is excellent. Thank you both so much.
You're welcome. Now I'm going to go to the next question. We have about 7 minutes left, so I'm going to the next question. I've got two more. Wait. And I'm trying to click on, but there you go. Please tell me your name and where you're calling from. It's Lenny Godfrey, Straight No Chaser. Welcome.
Good evening to everyone. This is Alphine Jefferson from Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, Richmond. Yes, okay.
Yes. My question is to Professor Shields, and the question is, how did your training in acting, directing, and stage management prepare you to be an award-winning professor and teacher at multiple institutions?
Well, hopefully the question answers itself. It's that combination of just knowledge and mixing that knowledge with experience, so that I wasn't just speaking out of a book, so to speak, but I could also take the book learning, lectures, and match them up with the experience that we were going through and try to modify it so that it made even more sense. And I think I could talk to my students from an experience point of view that made it a little more digestible than just saying, well, this is what's in this book. You know, okay. I could give them examples. Mm-hmm. And I could also point my students to sources, you know, look here or look there, or that might not be in the bookstore. You know, you might have to go to a library, you know, experience a book. It opens this way, you know, to get that information. So it's again, just the power of research and loving it and not being afraid of it, I think.
Okay.
Great question.
Thank you so much.
Yes, lovely. Thank you. Thank you. All right. And here's another question. Let me see if I can get this to click. There you go. And thank you very much for calling in. Lenny Gaffey, Straight No Chaser. Welcome. Give me your first name and where you are from, please.
My name is Julius, and I'm from New York.
Familiar voice, yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to ask Dale what he believes is the most important thing to have to be a successful teacher, and what of Black theater and Black studies to impart to someone. What is the most, let's say the three most important things if they want to be a successful teacher like yourself, what they need to actually know and do? That's my question.
Dale? Oh, wait a minute. Let me see. Dale? Wait a minute. Dale, can you, okay, you're back. Okay, there you
okay,
go.
Thank
you.
You
moved
I
on
had
the
to
board.
Learn to, okay, quickly, I had to learn to listen, and I had to learn to listen without ego. I had to learn to listen without assuming. That was kind of my biggest hurdle. I had to learn how to present material without throwing my judgment on it. So things got very, very factual. I had to learn to put a classroom together so it was more of a think tank. So I never taught from that formation where the teacher's desk was up front. I taught in a circle. I wanted to make sure that everybody felt comfortable in that circle to be able to speak their mind or their opinion. I never talked about things in the terms of right or wrong, but just your opinion. And that really made the classroom a very supportive atmosphere. And I think that's the very basis of it. As I tried to say before when I was just talking to Lenny, I'm slowly finding out, not only with Black courses, the introduction to Black studies or the Black theater history, it's all history. And we're all connected. They're just strings going every single way that you can imagine, you know, depending on what the piece we're talking about, where it was, who wrote it, you know, who produced this. It all just became a very big, wonderful, gigantic puzzle of history. And I presented it to my students in that way. And because I presented it that way, nobody got put on the defensive. We were just discussing things.
Okay. So thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dale, we are just about at the end of our hour together here on the audio version. We're going to do a video version. This time it's not going to be the webinar. It's going to be a meeting. So it's just going to be you and myself, but I'm going to post this. But, Dale, do you
Was that the end of our question?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
The end of our question.
Okay.
Now, do you have anything for about, you've got a minute and a half. Tell me.
I just wanted to say just very, very quickly how fascinating the history of Black theater is in particular, and how enamored I am of all those people who came before me. I think of the Douglas Turner Wards and the Woody Kings and the Robert Hooks and the Barbara Ann Tears and the Robert Macbeths and the Ellen Stewarts and Rosetta Lenoir and I don't know why her name is just out of my head at this point, but it's fascinating to me and to understand what they had to go through in order to keep those institutions running. I can't imagine the difficulties that they ran into. And just God bless all of them for what they did.
Isn't it
because
true?
Because that helped me. That helped me to do what I'm doing.
It has helped all of us. You know, I think the thing
to realize
is that without them, we would not be doing any of what we do today.
I wanted to make sure in my work that I was saying thank you. One brilliant director, really quick, Walter Dallas, who passed away, I think he had gotten very, very sick. But he wrote me and said, Dale, I want you to write my book. Unfortunately, by the time we started gathering information, he was so ill that we couldn't finish. But I was so, so honored that he had seen my work and picked me to write about him. It turned into just a profile, but it's those kind of people that I just, God bless them, you know.
Yes. Now, Dale, I have.
So
to,
that's.
I'm going. We're going to finish this conversation on the Zoom.
Yes,
we
ma'am.
We only have a minute left. So.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. I'm going to thank everyone for tuning in. I want them to come back next week. I will have a wonderful, Paul Willistein is a wonderful reporter. We're going to talk about his version on the arts. And then please look out for the video that Dale and I are about to do. And now, Dale, I will see you on Zoom.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Lynn.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. Thank you.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever when you kiss me.